few years ago, I read an article in the paper. It's probably one of the saddest articles I've ever read in my life. At least one of the top three. And the story was told of a couple who lived in a small Midwestern town. And husband and wife with three children. And the wife and the husband had lived there for many years and were known very well in the town. And you know how small towns are. Everybody knows everybody in Smallville, Iowa. And basically everyone talks about everyone in small town Iowa. It's very hard to have a private life in a small community. And this couple had been through some difficult things with the wife's health. The wife had gone into very poor health. But the husband had remained very faithful to his wife and loved her and cared for her and was often seen in the front yard playing with the children and loving them and embracing them and frolicking in the yard with them and through the leaves. And someone in the community thought they would have fun and begin a rumor that this husband was being unfaithful to his wife. And little by little it spread, and from one beauty parlor to the next, from the barber shop to the next, and one day it got to the wife. And because of the wife's physical condition, because of her health, she herself was feeling somewhat inadequate as a wife. And she heard this and it was devastating. Simply devastating. And one particular evening, when the husband came home from work, walked through the picket fence, and what usually occurred was that his children were there to greet him, and his wife was at the door, and there was no one at the picket fence, and there was no one at the door. He walked into the house, had to use the key, which he very rarely had to do, and there was a strange, eerie feeling in the house. And he went to the upstairs, and he went through the downstairs, and no one was there. He went into the basement, and there hanging from the rafters was his three children and his wife. Trust. Who can we trust? That's probably got to be the saddest story I've ever read in my life. And you know, you think through, you think, why didn't she talk to him? Why didn't she say something? Didn't she know that she could trust him? Did she even wonder if it was true or not? And yet in real despair, she took her own life and that of her children in a moment of hopelessness. Our society today is very distrusting. We see this in politics. We see it in business. We see it in the ministry. And we see it in every facet of our society. We even see it in marriage. We've become so distrustful. We are suspicious of everything and everyone and everyone's motives. We're always alert to look out for our own feelings, and we get our defense mechanism up, and we don't want to get hurt, and we don't want to take a risk. And in 1 Corinthians 13, the Bible tells us, this is the chapter that we've been going through, that love always trusts. Love always trusts. The song we sang this morning, "The Lord's Loving Kindness Indeed Never Ceases." One of the greatest encouragements in my own life is knowing the stability that God brings to my life and to that of my family. God can be trusted. God can be relied on. He keeps His word. And if we're going to learn to build relationships with those we love, in our marriages and in our family life and with friends, then we need to learn a continuing lesson in love, that love always trusts. Love shows confidence in people. I remember when Kenny Rogers first came out with his song, "She Believes in Me." I don't know just what she sees in me. That was one of my favorite songs. And I listened to that song, you know, and I was so thankful. I remember when it first came out, that I had a woman like that. That I had a wife like that. That I knew believed in me and had confidence in me. Not because I was so perfect or was so wonderful, but because I knew she had made a commitment to me to trust me. And yet, trust can become eroded in our relationships. Billy Joel sings a song, "It's a Matter of Trust." Billy Joel sings some very interesting songs. For a gentleman who I don't know what type of a biblical perspective he has. Don't go changing to try to please me. I love you just the way you are. If only that could be true. You know, the song is neat, but how rarely that's true. It's a matter of trust. It's a song about trust in relationships, but how seldom that's true. But with God, it can be true. And in our relationships, we can learn to give trust, to preserve trust, and to earn trust. And we want to look at those three things. First, I want you to understand that the biblical definition of love is that love always trusts. Love believes in people. Love will show confidence in people. And sometimes, your confidence will be betrayed. I have had that happen to me. I have betrayed my wife's confidence. There has been times that I have let her down. She's trusting in me for something, and I didn't come through. But that didn't mean she just all of a sudden threw up her hands and gave up and didn't trust anymore. And I'd like to look at three things today that I think can help you in your life, in your relationships, learn to foster trust, learn to give it, and learn to keep it. The first one is, love gives trust. We need to learn to express confidence and show confidence in those we love. I've learned this so many times the hard way, and I'm going to get, like as I usually do, very honest with you, very frank with you, in my own relationship with my wife. One of the things that, at least in our relationship, yours may be different. I'm not saying everyone's is like this. I don't care particularly to go to the doctor. Anyone here like to go to the doctor? I don't like to go to the doctor. I don't trust the medical profession. Okay? We get a chuckle out there? That's the truth. I don't. I have my questions. I have my doubts. The dentist is really hard for me to go to. To put $2,000 into something I cannot see, it just took away a little pain, and I wonder if they really would have rotted out, or if I just helped someone make a wonderful living. And since we've been married, before we were married, we were in a bad automobile accident. A very bad automobile accident. My wife was in the hospital for a week. And of course, you know all the stories about chiropractors. And my wife needed to go see the chiropractor, and so she began to go. And I'm kind of the doubting Thomas. You know, I'll be honest with you, I'm the doubting Thomas. But she really trusted this individual, and he was a really genuine individual. And I learned over time that he was a very trustworthy individual. But I was a doubter. One of the things I found happening, though, in my relationship with Kathy, I don't know if you knew this, but it's a national statistic that women see the doctor approximately 5 to 1 of what men do. I just think there's added health problems, there's pregnancies, there's everything else, you know. There's varicose veins and all kinds of things that happen that are just different. And I think another reason is this attitude. The old tough it out guys, you know, we're going to tough it out, get through the pain. I'm not going to go and pay them and they'll just tell me take aspirin and I'll be well in a week. And you know what I found? I found I began to treat my wife like this. Oh, you don't need to go to the doctor. Who wants to pay him $50, you know? Who wants to pay him $100? And what was interpreted as, and what was really the bottom line, was I didn't trust her judgment. I didn't trust her judgment. That's the bottom line. That's the truth. And I began to realize that it was eroding away the confidence in our relationship. And it was other buying decisions that I usually made. That I began to realize, you know, Mark, you just don't trust Kathy. That's the bottom line. You just don't trust her. Why? Well, I don't know. Because she's a woman. Honest. You like that? Well, I'm just being honest with you. A lot of men think like that. And I began to realize, that's wrong. Love always trusts. And I don't care if $100 gets blown. Would I rather build trust in my relationship or always be a doubter and pinch a penny? And I began to realize that as I let my wife make more and more decisions, and whether she needed to go to the doctor or not, hey, whatever you need, let's go, we'll do it. If I have to get another job, we'll do it. I don't care. I trust you. I love you. And your health matters to me. And your best interest matters to me. It began to change our relationship. And it began to foster in our relationship an attitude and a mentality between my wife and I that, Mark, trust me. Mark, trust me. And he proves it in his actions. I think we need to learn to do that in our relationships. We need to express confidence in the opinions maybe our wife has to share with us, or someone we love has to share with us. And so often it's easy to look down on that and go, oh, that isn't true. And what you don't realize is you're just little bit at a time putting a bigger and bigger wall between you and those you love, and they don't trust you. You're not giving trust. And if you don't give trust, you'll never get trust back. If you don't open wide to others, they'll never open wide to you. So we need to learn to express trust. Secondly, we need to give responsibility that expresses your trust. I've learned this with my children. Last year, we had a big snowfall. My son was 6 then. My daughter was 7. And you know they always want to help dad. And you know what mom's head is? They always want to help mom. And you know the house always gets vacuumed a lot sooner if you do it, rather than trying to have them help you. Or if you're going to fold the clothes, I mean, just get out of my hair. You know, I just do it myself and it'll be done in 5 minutes. So we had this big snowfall, and I was going to go out later and shovel it. And a couple days before we'd had a big snowfall, and I'd gone out, and the kids really wanted to help. So I sawed off some snow shovels for them, and I let them help me. And they stuck with it and did fairly good, and I pay them real well whenever they help me. I want them to realize they have value. So I paid them, I think it was $10 a piece. So the next day, we got another huge snowfall, like 12 inches. My driveway will hold 8 cars, approximately, depending on the size, in a row. I came home, I had left early that morning, gone over the snow because I knew it was going to still snow. I came home later, I thought I'd do it all at once. I came home and my whole driveway was cleared. My 6-year-old and my 7-year-old had gone out and done the whole driveway. I tell you, I was thrilled. Oh, this is incredible. I don't have to shovel snow anymore. That's really what I thought. What I thought was, this is fantastic. My kids went out, took some initiative. They wanted to help, and I can trust them. My children, if you ever call, which I'm sure many of you have, and some of you probably will in the future, answer the phone, my 8-year-old, my 7-year-old, or my 4-year-old. And I've had probably more compliments on the way they answer the phone than anything. People just can't believe it. They think I have paid receptionists the way they answer the phone. But one of the downfalls has been sometimes messages are forgotten. Well, that doesn't matter. I don't care. I've never gone on them about it. I just try to emphasize, well, you just keep answering the phone and you try to write that name down because those are important to Daddy. You know, Daddy needs to return those phone calls. And they've gotten better and better. But I don't say to them, all right, that's it. This is too important. You're blowing this. This is over. You've proved your irresponsibility one too many times. You know what that does? It absolutely saps the hope and the desire to even be helpful. And you really doubt that individual. And they never lose that. You're going to have to work very hard to regain that and instill that confidence in that young life. And I've seen this with my wife. I remember, I do all the bills. I send out the bills. I do the budget and that kind of stuff. My wife balances the checkbook. All right? And there was a time in the years past where we didn't really always balance our checkbook. And we weren't always very meticulous with writing checks down. And more than one time, we came up $100 short in a checkbook. Anyone have that happen? It's a really bad feeling, isn't it? Your stomach goes down to your shoes, and you start getting these insufficient fund deals. And so not only have you lost the 100 you thought you had, but you lose another 100 because of the $10 for each 10 of the checks. They're overwritten, and you don't have it. And I remember it seemed like, and I don't think it was, but it seemed like it was always Kathy. It's always her. Let's see now. Let's go over this real careful. I want to find out who did this. You know? And we'd be going over to see whose handwriting. He said, well, I didn't do that one. Must have been you. And I realized, you know, pretty soon my wife's paranoid to even go out to the grocery store. She might forget to write the check number down or something. You know, because, boy, I'd grab the check. Well, how much did we spend? Okay, where are we at? You know? And I found, this is really rotten. I'm just destroying the trust we have in our relationship, and Kathy's losing confidence in herself. This is baloney. This is baloney. So what's $100? I'd rather lose $100 and have my wife grow in her confidence, and those I love grow in their confidence, than perfection. When you start to demand for perfection, you destroy trust. So if you're going to instill trust in those you love, you've got to give trust. You've got to stand by. Remember that song, Stand By Your Man? I'll tell you, boy, we long for that kind of mentality today. We long for someone who will stick with us, who will stand with us through our hard times and our good times. Remember, it is for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. That's what it's all about. And oh, how we yearn for that in relationships. Well, you be that way in your relationships. Don't wait for the other half to be that way. You be that way. And you'll be amazed at what begins to happen in your relationships. Give trust. The second thing I want to talk about is preserving trust. A lot of times, you can be filling up the top, and then there's a hole in the bottom. You know, and as fast as you're filling it up, you're doing other things that are draining all that you were trying to build. The first thing is criticism. Nothing destroys trust more than criticism. I used to work at a Cadillac dealership. And one of my jobs was ordering on a computer system. And so I would go in and I'd make orders in the computer system. And there were two women in the office and an office manager. He was the accountant, and that one was the receptionist and one was another accountant. And I would sit there, be typing, and the receptionist was older and the other accountant was younger, married about a year or two. And I got to tell you, I have never heard anything like the things I'd hear in there. And then I began to realize how normal this was. I hadn't been around this very often until I got into this situation. Oh, my old man, he's such a jerk. He's so insensitive, so unkind. He's just a jerk. He's always going out fishing. He's always leaving me with this. He's always doing this. He's always doing that. And it would go on like that. I'd be in that room for 2 hours. And this woman, all she would do was totally destroy, nuke, obliterate any kind of respect for her mate. And I want to be fair, I've seen the same thing with men. I've also been in situations with men. And the old lady, such a crab, nag, 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 right, 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 blah, 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 blah. And you've been there, you know, you're in the work situation, you see it. You know the problem with that? The problem is you say it too often, you start to believe it. And it destroys your relationship. Did you know most people destroy their relationships with their own two hands? They tear it down, and they tear it down. And then the older woman's going, oh yes, oh that's right, men are such jerks. And then you get some agreement there, you know? Someone else sitting there going, that's right. Or the guy at work going, oh yeah, my wife's the same way. And you spend your whole day focused around all the garbage in the one that you're supposed to love in their life. I remember one guy walking up to me one time. He was one of the mechanics, and I worked in the parts department, and he comes up to the counter, and he's talking, going on and on about his wife, and he goes, oh man, I tell you, isn't it a drag being married, Mark? And so, I said, man, hell, I said, I think it's great. His jaw dropped. I said, man, I got the most fantastic woman. I don't have to think about all the things you talk about, Al. Oh, I tell you, it's such a joy to have a woman who loves you and cares about you and sticks with you. And he just couldn't believe it. He just kind of laughed. And then he said, boy, you know, I wish I could say that. I wish I could say that. Criticism absolutely destroys anything that you're going to try to build up. And you may be at home trying to do all your part, but all day, during the day, you're tearing down the one that you're spending your life with. You tear them down. You tear them down. And one day, you begin to see them through those particular glasses all the time. They're nothing. Well, you know, the Bible has a little advice about that. And I'd like to read it to you. It's in the book of Philippians in chapter 4 and verse 8. And I'll just read this to you. Finally, brothers, whatever's true, whatever's noble, whatever's right, and whatever's pure, and whatever's lovely, whatever's admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy in others, think about those things. Whatever you've heard, seen in me, put into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Nothing causes strife and internal anxiety more than critical, grumpy, complaining spirit. And pretty soon, you won't have any peace in your relationship with your mate at all. What's the Bible's answer? Work very hard at thinking about the good and the excellent and the praiseworthy things in that individual. So often I'll be counseling with couples and I'll ask them. They'll be going on and on. And this happened the other night. I ran into an old friend who I haven't seen for 7 years. Who I knew at one time and now is married and really struggling. And I went over to visit with him and sat for 3 hours visiting with him. And as they sat on opposite ends, I was just over there as a friend. We were just visiting. I began to notice they were cleared at opposite ends of the couch. And they didn't look at each other. And when they talked, it was very derogatory towards one another. And then finally I found out that his wife was seeing a psychotherapist. And all of a sudden, I just stopped. I said, "Hey, what's going on? What's going on?" And lo and behold, they don't talk to each other anymore. They think each other hates each other anymore. I said, "Wait a minute, what about the man you married? What about the woman you married? Let's think, what were the things that drew you to this individual?" "Well, they were this, they were that." "Well, has that changed so much? Are you guys just not appreciating what's really there? And deciding to really focus on all the crud? Because we're all human. But there's good things in those we love." And the Bible's command is that we think about those things and we dwell on them and whatever's excellent and worthy of praise in that person. With your children, the same thing is true. Boy, I've watched young children as they grow up totally just ripped to shreds, torn apart. And sometimes you meet their parents and you wonder, well, they seem like okay people. They're okay people. They just never expressed any confidence in the child. If he got a D, the world ended. If they got an F, the world was over. And no confidence in that young child. Instead of overlooking their faults, they always brought them all to the surface. And our society really has a major plague, a major disease of doing that, and it's ruining relationship after relationship, business after business, and creating total mistrust. If you want to preserve your relationship, you need to get rid of a critical spirit. You need to think about the good things in your children, your mate, and others, and believe the best of other people. And I want to tell you something. That's hard work. That's hard work. Our minds gravitate toward the negative by nature. You don't even have to work. You don't even have to work. You can talk to someone, you can leave them, and immediately go to all the negatives. You have to actively obey this principle. And believe what's good. And think about what's good. And begin to appreciate afresh the things in that mate. The third thing, and the last, is earning trust. Earning trust. We also have an obligation not only to give it, but to be worthy of it and to earn it. Number one, always, always, always keep your promises. Always keep your promises. I have to think very long and heavy before I say to the kids, "Well, what do you think? Maybe we should go to McDonald's or something." The moment I say that, it is a promise. It's a promise. My children have learned that when Daddy promises something, he'll come through. I remember one particular time, I had said we'd go do something. The day kind of wore on. I wasn't feeling very well. And they came up to me and said, "Well, Dad, you about ready to go? Well, Dad, are we going to go?" And I was really searching for a good excuse. A real good one. "Well, kids, Daddy just doesn't feel good." Or, "Well, it's kind of late now." Or, "Well, we can't afford that." And I began to realize, whatever I do is a major cop-out. They will take it as a lie. I made a promise, and I'm sticking to my promise. And I have learned that lesson. You must always keep your promise, and the day you don't will be the day that you begin to foster distrust. And if you find out that you didn't keep your promise, the second point is always be very quick to acknowledge wrong. Nothing fosters distrust more than people who will not admit their wrong freely and in humility. I've known parents like this, and they fostered in their children. They wonder why the kid, you know, why has he got so many problems? Because he can't admit he's wrong. Why can't he admit he's wrong? Because his parents never admit they're wrong. We must learn to admit our mistake. I was wrong. I was wrong. I was sitting with a young person the other day, and they were asking me some advice about their parents and how they could help develop the relationship with their parent. I said, the first thing you can do, the first thing, is you write a very long, a very personal, a very intimate note to your parents, and you let them know you were wrong, and you'd like them to forgive you. Because I know they've never heard that from you. And you owe them that. That'll begin to foster trust again. So keep your promises. Always keep your promise. And number two, always be quick to admit wrong. Number three, always keep secrets. Always keep secrets. Do not gossip about others, or I guarantee you, you will get that reputation and no one will trust you. It really breaks my heart, and I really feel, at the same time it breaks my heart, I just have such incredible excitement inside when I see men or women that are telling someone else they work with all the garbage and the crud in their mate. And it really breaks my heart. At the same time, I think, oh, I am so thankful for a wife who keeps her mouth shut. And my wife has told me the same. I only share things that I know she and I would agree about. The things here, sometimes you might think, I wouldn't want my husband to think that. Well, we're in this together. You see, when I'm here, we're here together sharing our lives with you. There's a lot of things you don't know, and you'll never know. They're secrets. Always keep a secret. Because if you don't, you're going to get a reputation, and no one will trust you, and eventually your kids won't trust you. Moms and dads, listen, don't ever be telling other people in a living room or somewhere else, and your children can hear, in fact, I wouldn't even do it, about all the negatives in your kids. The day they hear you is the day they die inside. And I've seen this happen. A young child overhears a mother in conversation, oh, that little Johnny, he's such a brat. He's just, oh, sometimes I wish he wasn't even here. And they heard it. And their heart is just ripped right out of them. And you don't know the work you're going to have to do to rebuild that trust. The last thing is always be honest and be men and women of integrity. Always be honest. I had something happen I'll share with you. I've wondered whether I should share this with you. I'm going to share this with you. A few months ago, I was going through my files, and occasionally I go through my files. I have files, you know, records. And I'm leafing through the files, and I found a 1985 state tax return. I hadn't sent it in. And I owed, $68. So, of course, your heart starts to pound, you know. And I thought, all right, what should I do with this? Pretty obvious. Well, not for everyone. And I thought, well, I got on the phone. I dialed Iowa. I said, hey, listen, he's going through my files. I didn't send this in. I want to make it right. What penalty do I owe and what interest do I owe? The amount came to $88 or something like that. I said, I'll get it off. And I sent it in. And this is one of the things I've been wanting to excel in my life more and more with my children. Proverbs says that it's a wonderful heritage to have an honest father. Always be honest and learn to be men and women of integrity. And that gets back to keeping your word. Keeping your word. If you're going to be somewhere, be there and be there on time. If you're at work, if you're in business, you see these things can apply to everything. If you're going to instill the number one thing that'll sell today, there's pressure. If you're in the sales world, you're in the business world, money is the issue. Make money. Produce, produce, produce. And I remember as a salesman, I was working this sales route, and I had a boss who was anything but what we're talking about today. Okay? Was not a man of integrity. What he wanted was the territory to produce and to produce any way it could. So he wanted me to go around and bake all these promotions. We had all these giveaways, and if a guy had buy 55 spark plugs, he could get a vice grip free, you know. And if we get so many orders, we'd win contests, and his commission was bigger. That was the bottom line, see? He got commission off of me. So I remember going out to my sales route, and I remember the first time I walked into North Grand 66, introduced myself, said who I was. The guy lashed out in the most vulgar swear words you can imagine and said, you get the blankety blank out of here and don't you ever set foot back in this place. I didn't know the guy. Somebody, man, had damaged big time the trust we had. I want to tell you that. And as I was walking out the door, I said, Larry, I said, hey, listen, all I want's a chance. I'm really sorry. You're right. You got grievances. And I'll stop back some other time. And I did. And the next time I had to walk out a little bit the same way. He was a little less sore this time. But I just told him, I said, oh, Larry, I want you to know something. I know you're mad, and you have a right to be mad. You don't know what kind of reputation I have to live with, but I want you to know something. This company is not built on Sig Auto Parts' reputation. It's built on Mark Darling's reputation, and that will never happen to you. And if you buy something you're not satisfied with, you return it, and I'll take the flack. I don't care what those over me think. We're going to run this business with integrity, or I am leaving. And he looked at me and said, Mark, I respect that. Well, in time, it turned out he became one of my largest customers. Bought thousands of dollars of merchandise. And then one day, I got tested. Because the station he went, kind of went under. Just through some very difficult, uncontrollable circumstances. And he had bought what we call a Walker Muffler Bay. $3,000 worth of tailpipes and exhaust. And he wanted me to take it back. See, I worked on commission only. That means when I take $3,000 of things back and give credit, and my gross volume that month was $20,000, it lowers it by $3,000, takes food and money out of my family's pocket. I took it back. And my boss about killed me. And I said, hey, you know what, Don? You told me we should do this. You told me we could do this. And if we don't do this, I'm gone. I will not lie to these customers. And so for the first year I worked there, I didn't promote a thing. I didn't promote a thing. You know what I did? I went in and I introduced myself. I said, hey, I don't expect to be the first auto parts house that you dial. We haven't earned your respect. We haven't earned it. All I'm asking for is to be third, second or third on your list. And I'd like the opportunity to earn your trust. And I wrote a long letter to the president of my company. Told him that's what I was doing. And pretty soon, the territory doubled. And then I could go in and talk about the promotions. And the guys knew they could trust me. We had a Monroe shock sale. And you'd buy $1,000 worth of shocks. Because if you have the shocks, you usually sell them. See, that's the problem. If you got them, you sell them. Otherwise, the customer goes to Sears or something like that. And I wanted to help these guys be successful. But I also knew they didn't have lots of money laying around. So we'd go in and we'd give them 30, 60 day, no billing. And $100 or $300 worth of free shocks. And I'd go in and tell them, listen, hey, Here's what I'll do. If you're stuck with these when this billing period's over, then whenever you need a pair of shocks a customer has in and you don't have them on your shelf, I will deliver the shocks to you that you need from my stock, and I will exchange them even up for the shocks you have on your shelf. You don't think that built trust? That builds trust. If you want to build trust in your marriage, then you have got to give it the same energy we give to the business world that we give to those that are out among us. Be people of integrity. Remember to give trust, preserve trust, and earn trust. And I guarantee you that you're going to have a much more satisfying, wonderful life because the Bible works. And the Bible will work in your relationship with those you love, with your children, with your mate, and people that you work with. Let's pray.